This evening, we begin our section in Nach called Pesel Micha. Now, Pesel Micha, unfortunately, is not going to be the most upbeat of sections. We're actually on the way into the abyss in terms of a Sefer Shoftim over here. But the one thing that is definitely true is that most people don't get to this part of Shoftim. Most people don't get to these last two stories, which are, in fact, not related to a particular Shofet. And it requires a little bit of consideration and work together to understand this. So we're going to start what we're going to be covering in the next 4 weeks is Perek Yud Zayin and Yud Ches, and then to consider how this is thematic to Sefer Shoftim and why perhaps it is included. Why here and why at all, what difference it makes to Sefer Shoftim. So let's start at the very beginning over here and try to understand what the Navi is trying to convey to us with the details that are given to us. There's not so many details. And just one last thing is that in these next two sections, in Pesel Micha and Pelegesh Begeva, we're going to find that this section of Nach is the section of Nach that has no heroes. We're not going to have any heroes over here. We're going to feel very badly for a number of the characters, but we're not going to have anybody who's going to be a knight in shining armor necessarily, unfortunately, in these sections over here. Welcome to Jonah Shul. Okay, so without much further ado, let's start at the very beginning. Perek Yud Zayin, Pasuk Aleph. This is on the first page in the sources. So we're told by He Ish Ish Mehar Ephraim Ushmo Michayahu. There was a person from the mountain of Ephraim, and his name was Michayahu. So this is our introduction. And he is going to be our lead character. So, first of all, let's stop for a moment and consider. We, a lot of us in this shir, have been doing Sefer Shoftim for a while. In fact, this is now our year and a half, almost, of Sefer Shoftim. We've done 6 units. But there's one place over here that we've talked about, that Har Ephraim is a central location in Sefer Shoftim for a number of reasons. What is the significance of Har Ephraim, the mountains of Ephraim? So where does Yeshua inherit? Yeshua inherits, I think it's around Har Ephraim, but more recently, who else is associated with Har Ephraim? It's a tough one, even for doing this has been a little while back, but there's one particular person who is associated with Har Ephraim, and that is Ephraim is definitely in the territory of Har Ephraim. Very good. It happens to be that Devorah, the Shofetes Devorah, actually was in the region of Har Ephraim. So we start off by setting the stage of a somebody who arises from the same place as Devorah. That's just something to consider. And what we have to think about in terms of this is the following: is that so here we meet this person who suddenly appears in the same place as Devorah. And what we're going to notice, very interestingly enough, about the story is we don't know when it is. It appears undated in Sefer Shoftim. How long is Sefer Shoftim in terms of years? Great! Shoftim is 369 years, which is an extremely long amount of time for a pretty small Sefer. Right? So Sefer Shoftim is not a huge Sefer, and we have 369 years. That is almost the same amount of time for the time from the Beis Hamikdash's existence. So when you're talking about all the kings in Malachim, and the earlier Sefer Shmuel, about half of Sefer Shmuel, it's about the same as Sefer Shoftim. So in and amongst that somewhere is the story. And we don't know when. So we have to sort of look for clues to get a sense of where and when this actually occurred. So we're told that it's in the same region as where Devorah was the leader, and we have a person called Michayahu. Sounds like a frum name or not?
No.
So, sure. What was that? Just as we were out in associations, Michayahu. Sounds good, right. It's, you know, the ending is like, you know, is very much similar to the later prophets, you know, Yeshayahu, Yirmiyahu, right? We this sounds like, you know, Hashem's name, the Yud and the Hay and the Vav is over here. This sounds great. Let's appreciate while we're step by step. So let's go further. We're told the following, and he says to his mother, Elef umea kesa shulukach loch, you know that 1,100 silver that was taken from you, Va'at olis v'gama mart ba'oznai, and you cursed in my presence. V'hinei ha'kesef, meaning the person who stole it. Hinei ha'kesef iti, the silver's with me. Ani lekachtiv, I'm the culprit. V'atomer imai baruch b'ni la'Hashem. So she says, blessed are you, my son. Not familiar. I'm not familiar offhand. Okay, yes. So there is a reference over here to which the Mefarshim do point out, and that is that Delilah,
right?
So when Delilah was being bribed to seduce her husband, just a perek earlier, it was with a similar quantity of money, and so people start equating this, and some people even go so far as to say that she is his mother. Now what that would do is, if you're going to associate that with her, is you're going to essentially, we've timed the story now. So then you're saying that this is a follow-on, a direct follow-on from the Shimshon, and you see that, you know, bad people sort of beget bad people, and we're going to have this whole story. That's if you want to take it that way. I don't know if we need to. Some of the Mefarshim go in that direction because of the money. But I think let's leave it neutral. Let's leave it neutral at this point in time. She has money. It was taken. Her son takes it. But he's a good boy. He returns it. He admits, and she is very happy with him. Who does she bless because of this?
God.
She blesses God. Now, I in the notes, I should whenever there's the name Yud Kei Vav Kei, I exchange it for a Hey. So just so that you know, this is not going to be requiring Gneza. However, she is blessing God specifically. This is very important because throughout the story, we're going to focus on who are we talking to. So. Unequivocally, she's happy with God, which is interesting because the next reaction she has is in Pasuk Gimel, "Vayoshev es elef umeah kesef le'imoy." He returns the 1,100 to his mother, and this is probably a large sum of money. "Vatomer imoy hakdesh ikdashti es hakesef la'Hashem." I have dedicated to God, miodi livni, from my hand to my son, la'sois pesel umasecha, to make a image. "Vato ashivenu lach." I'm going to give it back to you. She's so happy. She is obviously in such a good mood from the return of this money. She's going to now dedicate it to Hashem, but making a Pesel Masecha. Now, let's all recall very clearly, at the end of Parashas Yisro, we're told that after the whole Sinai experience, God says, what's the one thing that's a no-no is, okay, don't make Pesel Masecha, right? That's pretty clear in the Torah, is that you shouldn't be making molten images. And why not? Why specifically then? Why do you think Hashem was so insistent about it specifically at that point in time? Okay, so it's interesting. Well, that actually predates the Cheder Egel in Torah Israel. It was a little bit beforehand, but why was God so emphatic about it at that point?
Because he didn't want them to do something materialistic.
Right, so meaning they have this spiritually overpowering experience, and they're going to try to sort of crystallize, make tangible that experience in some way, and they've seen forms and images up there in the sky. So God says, don't make anything you see in the sky into an image, right? Because of that powerful experience. That's why it appears there. Now, she comes along and she says, I'm going to make something to God by doing what it tells me not to do. So it's very strange. We have to think about what is going through her mind at this point in time. It goes a little further. In Pasuk Dalet, Vayoshev es hakesef limoy, but he returns the silver. So let's just recount the transfers over here. Who has the money at the beginning? Mom, right? Then what happens is, he takes it. Now then what happens? He returns it. And then she gives it to him. Why does she give it to him?
To make it.
But then what happens is, he returns it to mother. Okay, so just there's a lot of backwards and forwards over here, just to follow the actual bargaining over here. Vatikach imoy masayim kesev atneur atzorif. She takes 200 silver, gives it to the smelter. Vayaseu pesel masecho. She makes this molten image. Vayhi beveis Michayahu. And it is in the house of Michayahu. So,
specifically a luminary or sun type
of
image?
We don't know what the image is at this point. We don't know. We're not given any indication right now. We're going to see additional items added to it as well. Right, a masecha seems to be some sort of image, a molten image. There are differences. There are differences between a pesel and masecha. I'm not familiar. I don't remember the exact what makes a difference between a pesel and a masecha in this case. But be as Or intermediary, to be more specific, you know. So it could be something which is acting as her, we'll call it, divining agent, perhaps. But what is interesting over here is a lot of things. First of all, is how much money does she have? Let's just put that on the table. Right, she's supposed to have 1,100. But what's happening is, how much is she putting into it? She's only putting 200. So what happened to the balance? What happened to the 900? Right, so what's actually going on over here in this story? So let's just like to draw your attention to the actual Mefarshim who discussed this just for one moment here. Let's turn to source 1. This is on page 7. Okay, So what is going on over here that there's this change of money? And also, we need to sort of try to understand what's going on in terms of backwards and forwards, and why did he have it and then she have it? So the Radak says in source 1, this is on page 7, the Radak says, he didn't want to deal with it. So she gave it to him. She said, you go find any vendor and sort out the deal. And he wasn't up to it. And she returns it to his. He returns it to his mother. She takes 200 to give it to the smelter to make this image. What's the 200-900 breakup? Is labor, right? Labor is a very expensive item. And so what the 200 is that the Radak understands over here is she's paying for the intricate work, and perhaps we'll even say maybe the divining properties that he claims to have as the agent doing this, and that's what the pay is. So the actual weight of this molten image is 900. Okay, the rest was just to now that's the Radak has passed this very simply, right? Very simple. What's happened over here? He didn't want to do it. He returns it to her. She pays up the rest. Now, the Malbim suggests that perhaps over here there's more of a drama. There's something else going on over here between this 200 and 1100. Listen now how he explains it. Vayoshev ha-sakesef lima. He returns the money to his mother. Sivper shemichol ha-ratzo liyos gizbar avodah zara. Why did he return it? Because he didn't want to be that person. He didn't want to be the collector or the responsible agent or officer for this foreign service. He didn't want to do it. He didn't want to make this image. And so he sat his brother down and he said, you know, Emma, you can't do this. You know, this is not appropriate. This is not the right way to channel your happiness. Now this happens to be a very interesting sugya, that the hekdesh doesn't apply to it because it wasn't in her possession, not for now. So why is there only 200, says the Malbim? Because she listened to him. She was affected by his pleas. And so what she did was she said, you know what, I'll pocket the 900, and I'll only make a small one. It won't be, you know, like what I was thinking about and what I mentioned beforehand. We'll make a toned-down pesel. It's not going to be so heavy and so intrusive. Now, this is important because what the Malbim is introducing to us over here is the fact that Michayahu, is he a good person at this point in time? You can see he is. He doesn't feel this is right. There's something. He feels uncomfortable with the situation. He's got this name, which is very much, you know, God's part of his name and lifestyle. And the Malbim understands that over here in this debacle over here, what's actually going on is he's trying to redirect over here whatever her contents are. What was that? Yeah. So as I was saying beforehand, unfortunately, we don't have too many heroes. You know, like so at this point in time, in the end of the day, as good as he is, he still stole his mother's money.
Maybe he was.
Okay. So we do have another model in Tanakh of such a thing. Where do we have such a model in Tanakh? Right. So we do have Rachel, who steals the trophim of her father to try to prevent him from doing this. And interestingly enough, I wonder. You know, he says, "I heard that you are cursing." Right, it sounds reminiscent of Yaakov cursing the person who stole those trophim as well.
But he's making trophim.
Okay, wait. Yeah, but let's just take this piece by piece at this point. It does sound, maybe that's what's going on over here, just to give him some more ground to stand on. But what the Malbim is saying is at this point in time, take a snapshot, and Michayahu is actually on the positive side. He's really putting the good pressure over here. So you're right, in a moment it's going to devolve. Yes. Yeah, in just a moment. You'll see.
But isn't the Malbim reading into the text by assuming that he was trying to convince his mother?
The Malbim is challenged by the fact that there's a discrepancy in money, and he does not want to take the approach of the Radak, because although the Radak is saying that the money given to the artisan was 200, but the Pasuk doesn't seem to make reference to anything else. So Malbim says, no, it seems that what she's giving him to actually work with is 200, so what happened to the rest? That discrepancy leads the Malbim to the conclusion that there must have been a conversation. Now we say, Va'ish Micha, so we introduced a new person.
Of course, I've made the
or
name.
No, it's now, you see, so what happens over here is, Micha now is, now we meet Micha, and the person Micha it has loy base Eloi. How do you finish that word? Is that Elohim or Elohim? So it's actually a machlokes we're going to deal with at the end. Is what is he trying to do? Is he making a house of God, meaning God with a capital G, or is he making a house of gods, like powers? It's not the Mefarshim actually have a machlokes on this, and it affects whether you can erase these names. Okay, just halachically, this machlokes we're going to see in a few moments. So I just want to get the concept. Sorry. What was that? It depends on this machlokes. You know, I just want to get to the end of this little section, if that's all right. And he has, I'm just hedging right now, he has a house of God. Now suddenly something else has happened. Now there's no longer just a person, there's not just a longer a masecha. Now he has trafim, he has these idols, and now he starts initiating his children as being priests. Now something over here is, what was that?
He did like a 180, like he was trying to, like, an adult thing, right? He got so into it.
Right, you see, that's what's disturbing about this whole story, is suddenly he becomes, you know, he lives, he's walking the walk now. The Malbim actually says, just on this topic here, the Malbim says, just listen to how he relates to our name change over here, which somebody had mentioned in source 2, so on page 7. The Malbim says, notes, of course, the change of name. He says, Va'ish Micha, me'oz avera goreres avera. He says, one thing leads to the next. Right, he went from evil thing to an evil thing, and that's why his name now becomes Micha. Ad she'asala beis Elohim, beis miyuchad avodas ha'pesel. That's why he now makes a we'll call it a shrine. V'achakach asal gam eifod u'trofim mikisa, and then he starts investing in it, and he starts putting into it his own idols and whatnot. And now he has a full-blown service and ritual going on in his house or in his little basement temple. Now, so you see what's happening over here is the way the Malbim is reviewing it, is you see the very slow devolution of an individual into full-blown service of idols, it seems like at this point in time, at least synchronism. And what's sad to see over here is an individual who was the person bearing the name of God suddenly becomes this leader, either business or spiritual leader of this shrine over here. And what happens is that Nach now informs us that this is a refrain which is going to come up three times. In those days there was no king in Israel, and each person did that which was right in their eyes. If there were to be a king, then what? Right, there would be some authority which would have been able to control the situation and take care and take charge of it. So that's if we read the word melech to mean king. So if we're to read the word melech to be king, then what's going on over here? What's the sefer critiquing essentially is? It's critiquing. It's critiquing the lack of leadership in the Shoftim period as a whole. Meaning, it's saying, you know, by Amim Ahim, Ein Melech B'Yisrael, the Shoftim, we'll call the Shoftim model doesn't work. That's what that sort of might sound like it's the Sefer saying. But it's not so simple. The Barbanel says that Melech might not be a king. Melech might just mean a power, a leader of note. So therefore, over here, what it's simply saying is, at this point in time, there was no Shofet. There was no leader who had either was capable, cognizant, or around to be able to do something about this. So just in this verse as well, there's layers in terms of understanding the blame or the guilt that's being placed by the Sefer on the generation. Is it saying that the whole of Sefer Shoftim is castigated, or is it more of a specific on the generation in which this was? And what is troubling for us is we don't know what generation it is right now. We don't know when to put this story at this point in time. Okay, we're going to spend some time afterwards going through the Mefarshim to get a sense of when and the relevance of when. But be it as it may, there's an expanding scope of what this critique is over here. The Tanakh tells us, as you can see, there was a little pay there, which means that we have a little break. And naturally, that's where Tanakh is sort of putting our period. Now the next part of the story starts. And there's this young man who comes from Bethlehem, and he's from the family of Yehuda, and he's a Levi, and he's Gershom. Now that's a very complicated pasuk, because what is he? Right? Who is this man? He is from the family of Yehuda, He is a Leviat, and he is, well, now what's Vuhu Garsham? Garsham, is he dwell there? It sounds like he was dwelling there, but it sounds like it also might be somebody else's name. It might be Garsham as well. So this is, we're told a lot about him, but it's not so clear who he is, right?
Can he be a Levi from
Yehuda? Exactly. How does it work if you have a Levi from Yehuda? Yehuda and Levi are mutually exclusive tribes. Now, so what happens is the Gemara really addresses this. The Gemara tries to address what's going on over here. And one of the suggestions is perhaps that, in fact, perhaps what's going on over here is that he's got a mother from one side and his father's from the other side. And the text is just telling us, you know, he comes from a mixed family, which is totally fine. However, it may be that there's something a little more that's going on over here. There's something which is going on over here. Let's take one further pasuk and then consider this . So the pasuk tells us, "Vayelech ha'ish me'ha'ir min Beis Lechem Yehuda." So he leaves the city in Bethlehem in Yehuda, la'gur ba'asher yimtza, in the place he's looking for, a place to live, wherever he's going to find it. Vayavor har Ephraim ad Beis Micha la'asos darko, and on his way, he stops off at the house of Micha to find his way. So let's just track his journey for a second, just to get a sense of where our Levi is moving. This is just back to page 15 on in the map. So you can see that if he's coming to the area of Har Ephraim and he's leaving Yehuda, that means to say that Beis Lechem is in the south, pretty much the center, towards the lower third of the page. In the center is Beis Lechem. So his journey over here is a journey northwards. Okay, so he's walking through the mountains, and as he goes through the mountains, that's when he encounters our village in which we are talking. So we have the new character walking in.
We don't have a name, though.
What was that?
No name.
And we don't have a name, which is so interesting because we're gonna see that he does have a name actually, but the Tanakh is hiding that for us at this point. The Tanakh tells us the following. Let's just finish this section, then we're gonna zoom out. So Tess, Vayomer lo Micha. Micha says, Me'ayin tova. From where are you coming? Vayomer elov Levi onochi. So he says, I'm a Levi. Mibeis Lechem Yehuda. So he's resolving a little bit of it. Might be that he's really a Levite, but he lives in Yehuda. So that's the way he seems to be describing it. Vanochi holech lagur basher emtza. I'm going to find a place to live. Now, usually the Levim sat in their cities. They dwelled in their places. Why do you think? Why is he roaming? They didn't have their own. They didn't have their own inheritance. So what's he doing? Why is he roaming? What possibilities could there be? So he's perhaps looking for a job. The Radak says, did you know what it was? Is that he was out of a job. So he's looking for any work. Ba'asher emtza means wherever opportunity avails itself, right? He's looking through the countryside. And so we have here, in a certain sense, an opportunist, right? He's looking for, I don't know if this is a sign of the times in terms of the sustenance that people are living with, but he's certainly looking for whatever opportunity he has, and he's about to find an opportunity. So Vayomer lo Micha, Shavoi Madi, stay with me, Ve'yeli la'av u'lekohen, and you'll be to me a father and to as a priest. V'anochi eten lecha aseres kesef le'yamim, and I will pay you a handsome amount of money per year. Ve'erech begadim u'michiyasecha v'yelech alevi. And I'm going to give you your clothes necessary and basically room and board as well as your salary, and he went. Now it is interesting to me that here you have a person who is really a na'ar, right? We're calling him a na'ar, which means sort of a younger person, and you're going to be our leader and our father, and you have to wonder to yourself, like, what's so attractive to Micha in this person over here? Now he's obviously looking for work, so he's on the more desperate side of the deal, perhaps. But what does Micha see in him? Okay, there's obviously something that he wants him for. Vayoel haLevi laSheves esayish, and this Levi tries hard to stay with is happy to stay with the man. Vayhi hanar loika achad mibanav, he becomes like one of his sons. What do we know about his sons? His sons were initiated as priests, right? Okay, so that's not a good thing.
It's interesting, though.
What are you talking about here?
Yes.
And instead, he becomes one of his sons.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's like the turnover, meaning, I wonder when he says, are you going to be to me a father? I wonder if he is saying that ultimately I want you to be the influencer, but you'll start off by being influenced, meaning the natural course of events is I'll initiate you, but I intend you to be the guy who's going to be the CEO in the end of the day. I wonder if that's what it is, but there might be an irony that the Tanakh is emphasizing over here. By the way, just 1 second, where else in Tanakh does it say Vayoel? Who else does it say Vayoel?
Moshe.
Vayoel Moshe, right? That's by Moshe Rabbeinu. When Moshe Rabbeinu was living in the house of his father-in-law, that was by Yisro at the very beginning, so it talks about Vayoel Moshe. It's interesting that he uses the same language. It's not for naught that he is linked to Moshe Rabbeinu, as we'll see in just a moment. Good. So it comes back to that. Comes back to the question: what does he see in this individual? Right. So somehow he sees legitimacy through this person. This individual is providing him with some form of legitimacy for his shrine. So let's see it in the words. He says in Yud Beis Vayimale Micha Esiyad HaLevi. So he initiates this Levat Vayilo Hanar LeChohen Vayhi Beveis Micha. He becomes a priest in the house of Micha. Vayomer Micha Ato Yodati Ki Yetiv Hashem Li. I now know that God is going to be good to me. Ki Hayali HaLevi LeChohen, because this Levat will be to me a Kohen. Take a look at the Radak for a second over here. This is a very interesting Radak. He says that, let's see if I think, in source 5, the Radak says a very interesting thing. He says, this is in source 5, Radak in Yuzan Yud Gimel, he says, Ki ayo li ha-levi la-kohen, klomar simon tov huze li, shinizdamen li mishevet ha-kohanim li yos le-kohen li. He thinks that it's a divinely, ordained sign for him, that he has a person from the tribe of priesthood who is now going to be his priest. Now, in actuality, the Levium are priests or not priests? They're not priests, right? The Levium are the people who serve in the Beis Hamikdash. So the Levium are there to sing. They open the gates. They're there for a lot of the services in the Beis Hamikdash, but they're not actually the priests themselves. So he is but nonetheless, it's as close as he's going to get, and he sees the opportunity right away as a legitimacy for his thing. So why not his sons? Coming back to the question, why is it specifically this person? Because he sees somehow that this person is going to be his stamp of approval, be it for the people around him or for himself from God. It is interesting to me that at this point in time, he still talks about God. Isn't it interesting? You see what's happening over here? Here is somebody who walks into his, he's setting up a shrine, and he says, "Now I know that God's going to be good to me." So it seems that that God, or the God of the Hebrews, is part of his pantheon at this point in time, right? He still recognizes HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but as a Rachman Alitzon, as a member of his group of powers.
He like Jews for Yashka. It's very
manipulative, and it's also very confusing. Yeah. It's very confusing because if you were to speak to him, it sounds like the type of vernacular that he's going to be using is going to be God, but at the same time it's twisted God service over here. What we're going to try to do is at the end we'll do an eon on how he got from there to from the earlier part to here. In terms of his actual psyche.
Is this also unusual? Weren't there bamot that people would sacrifice?
Okay, so bamot, the bama is really a backyard altar, right? And they're forbidden at various periods, but the bama actually is a way of sacrificing to Hashem at the end of the day. So they were at certain periods in time misused, but. That's more of an expression of, autonomy in service of God more than necessarily service of others. Okay, so just, yes, of course, and that obviously one thing led to the next usually. But at this point in time, Pesal, Masecha, and Trafim sound a little more than that, than what we bargained for with that. So let's just consider this just for a moment. We have this individual over here who at this point in time, we actually don't even know his name. Right, we have this funny individual who's a Levi, and we don't know his name. But it's interesting that if you actually flip to the very, 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 very end, he is given a name. we're gonna do the next Perek Yud Ches next week. But at the very end of this, we are told in Pasuk Lamed, Yerches Lamed, which is on page 7 at the very top. This is the end of Pesel Micha. Vayakimu lahem b'nei Dan esa Pesel. And the children of Dan established this shrine, v'yonasan ber Gershon b'menashe, and this man, whose name is Yonasan, the son of Gershom, the son of Menashe, he and his children were kohanim to the priests to the Shevet Adani. And assuming this is the same individual, which everybody assumes it is, we have now his name. So Nach sort of veils it from us. But did you notice that Nach was actually hinting to us beforehand who it was?
Gershom.
Right, because even though it said Vahu Gershom, you know, that means he lived there in the pasuk we just read, which was pasuk. Where was that pasuk? That was pasuk Zion. We saw that he was from the city of Bethlehem. He was a Levi, and he was Gershom. What is Gershom? Gershom means he dwelt there. But really, Tanakh is hinting to us that he is really Gershom. He's also a person of Gershom, and Gershom was the Levium. So that makes sense. So now, the Gemara really struggles with this individual. The Gemara struggles to work out who he is and what's going on over here. Let's start a little bit over here, and we're not going to do the full Gemara, but let's start in on page 10. This is the Gemara to be found in Bava Basra, Kuf Tesam Abeis, which is in our sources in 12. The Gemara says the following, quoting our pasuk: "Vayhi na'ar mi beis lechem Yehuda, mishpachas Yehuda v'hulevi v'gorsham." The Gemara says there's an internal combustion over here. There's a problem internally. You're telling me he comes from the Levium, but then you're telling me he comes from Yehuda. Elolav, the Gemara suggests rather what must be going on. So the most practical suggestion is that maybe he comes from two families, and Tanakh is emphasizing the fact that he has two families. Why does it tell us the family of Yehuda? So Rabbi has another suggestion. Maybe, in fact, his name was Levi. It wasn't that he came from the tribe of Levi. His name was Levi. So, in fact, is the Torah telling us, that is the Tanakh telling us who he is? Yes, it is. His name is Levi. But then wait a second, says the Gemara. That doesn't make sense. We just saw that Micha was so proud that he has his Levi as a Kohen. If his name is Levi, that doesn't give him any credence, right? That doesn't help him in his cause. So in Dizrami Le Gavra Dishmei Levi, so the Gemara says, you know what? He's grasping at straws so much that even a guy with the name of Levi is sufficient for him. That's what the Gemara says. V'chi Levi Shmoy, is Levi really his name? V'alo Yonasan Shmoy. Wait a second. We just saw, right, by the way, do you see how the Gemara is doing this? The Gemara is developing this sequentially. Right, the Gemara is allowing us to have the space that pauses between each stage to say, wait a second, right? It's developing as we go outwards. So now it says, we know from the end of Shoftim Yudches, as we just saw, that his name was Yonasan, as it says, V'Yonasan ben Gershom ben Menashe, hu uvanova yukonim l'shevet Adani. So we know what his name is. So you can't dub him Levi. So now we're back to stage one. Is he from Levi? Is he from Yehuda? So asks the Gemara. Amalei, they ask him, V'litamech v'chi ben Menashe hu? So the Gemara says, but wait a second, you're telling me this is the same guy at the end of Perek Yudches and over here, and you're telling me that he comes from Menashe? You're throwing in a third tribe now. Is he from Levi? Is he from Yehuda? Or is he from Menashe now? If you're going to say it's the same individual. V'alo ben Moshe hu? The Gemara says, wasn't he really from Moshe? Dichsiv Divrei Yamim, as it says in Divrei Yamim, b'nei Moshe Gershom v'Eliezer. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu had a number of children, and the two children are Gershom and Eliezer. Elo mitoch she'asa ma'ase Menashe, t'lo akasav b'Menashe, because he acted like Menashe. Who is Menashe? Right, so there's a king who's going to be in the future, who is going to be a king of Yehuda, who was the worst king, and that's not my words, that's Tanakh's words. Tanakh decry the actions of Menashe to the degree that the first temple is slated for destruction, at least in Sefer Shoftim, Sefer Melachim, based on Menashe's actions. He did pretty terrible things, and he instituted state condoned idol worship. because he acted like him, because this individual acted like him, therefore, Teloa Kosa B'Menashe. Therefore, he was attributed to the future character of Menashe. And similarly, Menashe, the king, came from which tribe? He was from Yehuda. He was the king of Yehuda. So therefore, the Tanakh is already saying that although he comes from the tribe of Levi, and that's why Micha was so happy with him, but really his actions were smacking of, or similar to, this individual called Menashe, this king called Menashe. Now, just a last point to consider, and that is that if you actually look at Tanakh itself, if you actually look in the text itself, in that pasuk, there is the word Menashe actually is not written regularly. The nun of that Menashe is written, what's called a nun toloi. It's a nun, it's a smaller nun, and it's hanging between the lines. So what's going on over there, what the Gemara is picking up on, the Gemara isn't just pulling this out of thin air. The Gemara is saying there's a tradition which is embedded in the very words. Really, the word should be Yohanan ben Gershom ben Moshe. This is Moshe's grandson. This is Moshe's Rabbeinu's grandson. But the Torah doesn't want to link him to Moshe. Meaning, in the end of the day, his actions don't reflect his grandfather. His actions reflect other individuals in Tanakh. So what does the Tanakh do? The Tanakh puts in that little nun which is hanging over there to say that there is a shadow of another genealogy. There's a shadow of another way of action, which is, in fact, in the future, this King Menashe over here. So, in this way, shielding Moshe Rabbeinu from being the grandfather of this person. Now, this, by the way, comes back to, remember just a moment ago, Vayoel Ha'ish. There are a number of parallels between Moshe Rabbeinu and what he does. We're going to have to think about, why Tanakh seems to be emphasizing that so much. But this answers a few questions, but it really raises a few more, right? So now, so in the end of the day, okay, he's not acting like Moshe Rabbeinu did, but then how did this happen? How can we be two generations away from the greatest leader of all time, and you have somebody who's roaming the countryside and is willing to take any job? So this is something which we're going to deal with. As you can see, this little section over here opens up a lot of questions. But in the meantime, this is the starting point of our story before we take this to the national level, which will be, God willing, next week. If there's